The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
This episode of Check the Locks is brought to you by our friends at Audible.
Audible is your one-stop shop for audio entertainment where you can always find the best of what you love or discover something new.
That's right. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from mysteries, thrillers, biographies, and of course, true crime.
And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month from their catalog to keep forever, including the latest bestsellers and new releases.
Audible members also get access to thousands of podcasts from popular favorites, exclusive new series, and this very podcast you're listening to now.
Plus, the Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking the dog, doing chores, Audible makes listening anywhere easy.
And best of all, Check the Locks listeners can try Audible for free for 30 days. So head over to audibletrial.com/checkthelocks or click the link in the show notes to start enjoying Audible today.
Warning, Check the Locks podcast is a true crime podcast and may contain graphic descriptions of violence, murder, sexual assault, and more. Check the Locks podcast is not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Welcome back to Check the Locks podcast. As always, I'm John Connor.
I'm Olivia Cornu.
Saying thank you for joining us this week as we dive into yet another truly terrifying true crime case. And in fact, not just another one. Olivia, this is our 100th case.
100.
I cannot believe it. It does feel a little weird that it's coming out on a Thursday, but either way, we're going to make it work. But how are you feeling? 100 cases. We broke it down before we got on here, but it's like we've done like almost like 90 hours of content since we've started. I mean, how are you feeling about 100 episodes?
That's a lot. It's crazy. Like, I can't believe we've done 100 full-time episodes. Again, I just keep going back to like, we never thought anybody would listen.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's really crazy. I thought we would do this for fun. And, you know, most podcasts statistically only last like 8 episodes. So the fact that like, we are now so far beyond that. I mean, with the short on time and stuff like that, like we're in the 180s, but you know, to do 100 of these, like researching these cases takes time, like sitting down. I mean, the one that we're going to cover today took me like 4.5 hours. So like sitting down, taking time to do it, it again, it's just feels so good to know that people are listening and it's resonating. And I don't know, I'm just happy to be here with you and to do this for the listeners. And I don't know. It just feels like a big deal. You know what I mean? If I've been in a good mood all day.
It's a huge deal. It's a huge deal. Somebody pick us up so that me and John can have a team and do a podcast and create better content.
Yeah. No, I think our content is fine. Nobody needs to pick us. No. We got this. We are DIY.
We are, but we are killing it for our DIY.
Yeah, we definitely are. And, you know, I will say 100 episodes in, I'm glad that I've been doing this podcast with you. You know, when I think about it, not really anybody else I could see myself spending that amount of time with. So really appreciate you being a wonderful partner on this 100 episodes and super excited to get to 200 with you as well.
Oh, for sure. I mean, our relationship, friendship has turned into something so unexpected and lovely at the same time. I feel like we're like best friends slash siblings in a way over video, because I feel like we get frustrated with each other. You get frustrated at me. We just work it out. We talk it out, you know, but at the end of the day, we're like, we're going to do it. And I think with the goal being the same, it makes it easy to be like, okay, like we have lives, but we make it work.
Yeah. I agree with that.
I appreciate you.
And I appreciate you too. And, you know, I feel like I don't ever hear people on podcasts really talk about that, but like, you know, there's a lot of scheduling. There's a lot of times that like, you know, stuff is supposed to get done. And then we both have lives and families and full-time jobs. And so like sometimes things fall through and you have to reschedule stuff or do something in a pinch. And it is easy to be like, you know, I'm like, you get frustrated with the other person sometimes, you know, like you said, like a very sibling-like relationship. So
yeah.
You know, it's not something that you can do, I think, with just anybody. And I think, like I said, I feel very lucky that, you know, you and I connected the way that we did and we're able to start this and, you know, have the kind of personalities where we can work together and the friendship has grown. And like we can, I think we speak to each other in a very healthy way when we're not on the microphone, which I'm very grateful for.
I'm like, oh, yeah, John's mad at me.
No,
John never gets mad at me. I mean. He doesn't get mad at me. John loves me. He loves my procrastination ways. He loves my animals.
I do. I love mostly editing your animals out of the podcast. That's what I love the most. But listen, this is 100 episodes. What do you think? Should we start off, before we get into the case, should we listen to a voicemail right off the top? Because we asked our listeners, hey, send us in some voicemails. Send us some emails, and we've picked a few to play throughout the show. And I thought it might be kind of cool to open up with one of those voicemails. What do you think?
I think since we have so many that we just kind of play them randomly throughout the episode, kind of like a little commercial break.
Yeah, let's do it. Well, let's go to the first one.
Hi, John. Hi, Olivia. It's Erin from Virginia. I haven't talked to you all in a while. I think I've been around since the beginning and have listened to each and every episode, some of them more than once. I can't really say I pick my favorite episode. I really enjoy them all. I really enjoy listening to the banter of you guys going back and forth. I feel like you are no longer just friends in my head. You're friends in my phone. Congratulations on hitting 100. I'm proud of you. I'm happy for you, and I'm looking forward to many, many more episodes. Good luck and keep it going. Congratulations.
Oh, Erin, that was just so sweet. I really want to like start crying right now. Like never in a million bazillion years did I ever think that somebody would appreciate the hard work that we do and what we put into Check the Locks. And just hearing that, you know, people truly enjoy listening to what we're doing and are supporting us is really beautiful. And I agree with Erin. We haven't talked to her in a long time. So I feel like we're due for like a Patreon chat.
We are. So for our patrons, you know, every once in a while we'll do just like a virtual meetup, and we try to invite some folks from the Facebook group as well. And Erin, I mean, has just been one of our biggest supporters since the show has started. I know for a fact that she likes to listen on her front porch in her rocking chair. Erin, if you're listening, I know you know what I'm talking about, but we appreciate you so much and your support. And I'm right there with Olivia. Like, you know, I record in a little bedroom in Nashville. I've got my like daughter's old, you know, tree stick 'em ups on the wall and stuff. You know what I mean? Like I look like I'm in a 6-year-old's bedroom. But to know that we're doing this here and it's being listened to all over the place and people like you support it, Erin, it means the world. So we just want to, again, say thank you from the bottom of our hearts for the support and for listening. And thank you for sticking with us for 100. It just means the absolute world.
Exactly what John said.
Well, I think that was a great way to start it off. But Olivia, I got to tell you, I think we have a pretty hard hitting case. I had never heard of it before. And when I got into the research, I was like, I can't believe I've never heard of this case, but I have heard a lot of different things that were inspired by it. And so I'm wondering, as we go through, if you're going to feel the same way or if anything sounds familiar, and then we can kind of talk about some of those references on the back end. Does that sound okay?
Yeah, I like it.
So for our 100th case, we are heading to Lincoln, Nebraska in 1958. So we're going back in time for this one, Olivia. On January 21st, Velda Bartlett was at home with her family. Now, Velda had been married to William Fugate, and they had had two children together, 14-year-old Carol Ann and her older sister, Barbara. But the marriage wouldn't last, and William would become a verbally abusive alcoholic, walking out on his family when Carol Ann was only 8 years old. But Velda would find love once again, this time with 57-year-old Marion Bartlett. And Marion loved Velda's girls like they were his own. In fact, the couple would go on to have a third child, 2.5-year-old Betty Jean Bartlett. Now, on January 21st, Velda asked Carol Ann's boyfriend to deliver some used rugs to the home. This was 18-year-old Charles Starkweather. Starkweather was born on November 24th, 1938. He was the third child to his mother, Helen, and his father, Guy, and the family lived a pretty normal middle-class life. Starkweather's father was a carpenter. However, he suffered from severe arthritis and he would struggle with bouts of unemployment. But Guy and Helen were a team. And when Guy couldn't work, Helen would step up and pick up shifts as a waitress. Charles Starkweather's family life was solid, but the same didn't apply to school. As a boy, he had red hair and was bow-legged. He also had a stutter. And because of this, he was bullied continuously. And a rage began to grow inside the boy. Starkweather grew older and stronger. And in high school, he thoroughly enjoyed gym class as it gave him an outlet to release his anger. But he would eventually drop out of high school and begin working as a garbage man. Now, it was around this time that Starkweather was introduced to James Dean and the film Rebel Without a Cause. Now, like many other teenagers at the time, Starkweather connected with the social outcast persona that Dean portrayed, and the live fast, die young mentality seemed to resonate with him, which did not pair well with the internal rage the teen was experiencing. Now, in 1957, Carol Ann's older sister Barbara had a friend who was dating a boy named Rodney, and while hanging out with the couple, she was introduced to Rodney's little brother, Charles Starkweather. Now, soon, Barbara would find a boyfriend of her own, and hoping that their mother would let them double date, she introduced her 13-year-old sister, Carol Ann, to Starkweather. The girl was immediately smitten with the older boy, falling for his self-imposed exile from mainstream society, and eventually the pair began dating. But Velda Bartlett was not thrilled about the relationship, and she planned to share her feelings on that January day in 1958. Now, at around 1:30 in the afternoon, Charles Starkweather arrived at the family home to deliver the rugs. It was then that Velda and the 18-year-old began to argue. Velda had been trying to convince her daughter to break up with Starkweather, and she and Marion told the teen to stop spending time with their daughter, Carol Ann. Starkweather would later say in an interview that he responded in a way that Velda didn't like, and it was then that Velda hit him several times. Now, that didn't sit well with Starkweather, so he struck Velda back. He then proceeded to walk into the other room and load ammo into a rifle. Then, he would shoot Velda and Marion, killing them inside their own home. Now, at the time, nearly 3-year-old Barbara Jean was home, and she began screaming in fear of what had happened. Then, in a truly monstrous act, Starkweather took the butt of the rifle and hit the child in the face. The blow would fracture her skull and kill the girl. Now, at this time, Carol Ann was at school for the day. And when she returned home, she found Starkweather in the home alone. Now, Olivia, this is where the story gets a little fuzzy. So, according to Carol Ann, Starkweather told the girl that her family would be safe as long as she cooperated. And essentially, she claimed that she was taken hostage at this point. But in interviews, Starkweather claimed that the 13-year-old was a willing accomplice. Now, whoever you choose to believe, the couple ended up holding up in the home for the next 6 days. And during this time, multiple visitors came to the house. But to avoid suspicion, The pair placed a note on the door warning people to stay away as the family had the flu. But when Carol Ann's grandmother hadn't heard from the family, she grew concerned. She contacted the police and asked for a wellness check to be done. When the authorities arrived, Carol Ann came to the door. Again, she told the officers that her family had the flu, and because she seemed to be okay, they believed her and left the home. But Starkweather was shaken, and he knew that it was only a matter of time before the police would return. So on January 27th, 1958, the couple fled the home together. Now, later on that same day, Starkweather's older brother Rodney, who we talked about a little bit earlier, came looking for Charles. And at around 4 p.m., he made a terrifying discovery. While searching the property, he found the body of Velda Bartlett stuffed inside an outhouse. Sadly, Betty Jean was found stuffed in a cardboard box near her. Her husband, Marion, was found inside the family's chicken coop. But police were concerned because there was no sign of Carol Ann. So before we go any further, Olivia, what are you thinking of the case so far? Where's your head at? What you got?
This is intense for 1957 and whatever, you know, in the 1950s. Like, I don't even feel like Velda had confronted him at this point. Like, and he's 18. And why did he have a gun on him? Were people that passive with guns then too? Like, I don't.
Well, from what I understand in the research, at the time, Lincoln, I mean, crime was just like, didn't happen, right? So nobody locked their doors.
Right. That's the Midwest.
Right. And I do think also back then in Lincoln, right, in Nebraska, people owned rifles and things like that. And the rifle,
probably farming.
Yeah. And the rifle that he had was actually his older brother's. What I found really interesting is, like, nowadays, right, we can diagnose people with things and be like, oh, you know, maybe you have borderline personality disorder, something like that. But in the research, one of the things someone said I found really interesting was, like, back then people were just called bad eggs and they were kind of written off, like, oh, that's Starkweather. No, he's not all there. He's a bad egg, right? So everyone just kind of accepted it. Like, this kid's just a little bit of a troublemaker. You know what I mean? But it is insanely violent. And I think the other thing I thought was really interesting too is at the time the town was really split, like, you've heard, like, wrong side of the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
The Bartletts and Carol Ann lived on what would be called the wrong side of the tracks. So there was a lot of criticism of the police because they were like, well, if this was the other side of town, you know, how could these kids be there for 6 days? How could these bodies be in the backyard? If this was the other side of town, like, would this investigation have gone the same way? So
right.
A lot of class stuff in there that I thought was pretty interesting when I was looking at the research.
You know, and I, not to get too sidetracked, but I'm watching the Life After Prison or whatever with Gypsy Rose. And the episode I just watched, she mentions, like, you know, she's going and visiting where she's from originally. And, like, people just tell her, yeah, we knew your mom wasn't right. Like, something wasn't right about her. And, you know, nobody did anything about it. And she mentioned something about, like, her mom seeing things and hearing voices and stuff. But she was like, I didn't know that to say something about that. I don't know. And so it's like everybody knew she wasn't right, but nobody said anything.
Yeah. Thanks for telling me now, all these years later, you know. And I do have my own thoughts about the Gypsy Rose case, which I will definitely save. Because I feel like we will go on a rabbit hole, you know, but
we'll have to save that for the Patreon.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah. We could do some Gypsy Rose talk on the Patreon. I'm down for that for sure. But should we keep on going with our 100th case for today?
Yes.
All right. Now, authorities would later learn that this was not the first murder that Charles Starkweather had committed. A little over a month prior, on November 30th, 1957, he had stopped at a local service station. That night, 21-year-old Robert Colvert was working. He had just finished his time in the service and was working the night shift at the station. That evening, Starkweather entered the store and asked to buy a stuffed animal on credit. Colvert refused, and it was then that Starkweather robbed the clerk at gunpoint. He then proceeded to drive Colvert to a wooded area and executed him, leaving him along the side of the road. His body would be found on December 1st, 1957. Charles Starkweather was extremely dangerous, and he was now on the run with Carol Ann in his 1949 Ford, with the police hot on their tail. With Starkweather behind the wheel, they drove toward Bennett, Nebraska. And once there, they found themselves in the driveway of August Meyer. Now, August Meyer was a 70-year-old man, and in my research, I found some conflicting stories. And so I want to just kind of give both. One of the articles that I was looking at said that August Meyer was a friend of Carol Ann's family, and that's why they went. Another piece said that they were just driving and ended up getting stuck in his driveway, so they went to the door for help to see if the guy could pull him out of the driveway. So either way, again, I just wanted to look at both because, you know, I don't want to get anything wrong or anything like that. But either way, they found themselves at the home of August Meyer. Now, the elderly man welcomed the teens inside the house and unknowingly sealed his own fate. Starkweather proceeded to shoot Meyer and his dog with a shotgun. His body was then placed in an outbuilding on the property, and the pair again fled the scene. Now, what's also interesting is that the police were on the trail of Starkweather, and so they tracked them to August Meyer's home, and they expected to find Carol Ann. They were like, there's no way this girl is still alive. And so they ended up throwing like tear gas in the window, thinking that, you know, Starkweather was still held up in the house. Threw tear gas in, broke down the door, and all they found was August Meyer. And it was at this point they were like, oh, Carol Ann is with Charles. They're traveling together. Either she's an accomplice or a hostage, but they kind of put it together like, we're not going to find her body, which I thought was pretty interesting. Now, while leaving the Bennett area, Starkweather's Ford got stuck in the mud. So he and Carol Ann decided to hitchhike to catch a ride. And that is when they were picked up by 17-year-old Robert Jensen and 16-year-old Carol King. Now, these two were high school sweethearts, which if they hadn't met Starkweather and Carol Ann, you know, were probably on their way to getting married, you know, having a life. That's just what you did in 1958. But sadly, the two helpful teens had no idea that they had picked up a literal monster. Now, at some point during the ride, Starkweather pulled his gun on the couple and he demanded Jensen's wallet. After, he ordered them to pull off on the side of the road and forced them out of the vehicle. Then, he marched both Robert and Carol into the storm cellar of a nearby home. Once there, Starkweather shot Jensen 6 times in the back of the head. Then, he turned his sights on Carol. Starkweather attempted to rape the girl, but was unsuccessful. And it would later be determined that he was impotent. But after the attempt, he would shoot Carol King and stab her repeatedly in the genital area. When asked later, Starkweather would tell police that 13-year-old Carol Ann sat in the car listening to the radio. And their murderous road trip wasn't done yet. Now, in Jensen's car, Starkweather and Carol Ann headed back towards Lincoln, and when they returned, they found themselves knocking on the door of a couple, C. Lohr and Clara Ward. Now, Lohr was a steel company executive who lived in a large home in Lincoln. Starkweather was familiar with the house from his route as a garbage man, and he had even shoveled snow for the affluent couple in the past. Upon knocking at the door, they were greeted by the family housekeeper, Lillian Fensel. She recognized Starkweather from the work that he had done and invited the teens inside. And once in the home, he proceeded to tie up both Lillian Fensel and Clara Ward before stabbing them repeatedly. Now, a short time later, C. Lohr would return home from lunch with Nebraska's governor at the time. But when he arrived home, he was met by Charles Starkweather and Carol Ann Fugate. And it was then that Starkweather shot Lohr, killing him instantly. The two teenagers then robbed the home, taking jewelry and leaving behind Carol King's high school letter jacket. They then fled in Lohr's 1956 Packard, which I'm just thinking, Olivia, about like how affluent this couple must be if you're coming home from dinner with the governor or lunch with the governor and you're like, oh my God, like my wife, my housekeeper.
Everything.
Yeah. Like, I guess
that just took a massive turn for me. This whole thing is just like one after the next, and they're all so unrelated.
Yeah, they're just like driving around looking for anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like, oh, I used to do work in this neighborhood at this house. Let's go see if they're home and kill them too.
Yeah. And like the thing that was sticking out to me as I was going through the research was like, imagining myself as C-Lore and being like, oh, I live this wealthy life. You know what I mean? Like, I'm privileged. Nothing like this could ever happen to me. And then it's like in an instant, everything is shattered and you lose your life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just a situation where you're probably like, oh, this would never be me. You know what I mean?
It's just so bizarre and it's so random.
100%. Well, once the governor heard about what happened, he ordered the National Guard to participate in the manhunt for the teenagers, which now included the FBI and local law enforcement. And the people of Lincoln were terrified. Local businesses closed and parents pulled their kids from school. And in a documentary that I was watching that I'll talk a little bit about later, you know, there was a lady who was a kid at the time. He said, yeah, my grandfather just sat up all night with his handgun in his lap because Starkweather worked his route and would always talk to him about his car and how much he liked his car. So he's like, oh, this guy could just come and try to take my car. I'm going to be ready for him. You know?
Yeah. He's just as random as the next.
Yeah. 110%. So the community is freaking out. And there was a reward that was offered for the capture of both Charles and Carol Ann. But what law enforcement didn't know was that the pair had already crossed state lines and they were now carrying out their deadly road trip in Wyoming.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable.
Now, on January 29th, 1958, Starkweather was again looking to trade cars. And while driving, they spotted a Buick parked on the side of the highway. Inside was traveling shoe salesman Merle Colson. And while sleeping behind the wheel, Starkweather pulled off to the side of the road and approached the vehicle. It was then that he fired a shot through the window. Now, Colson awoke and attempted to flee the vehicle, but Starkweather continued, striking the man 9 times, killing him in the front seat. The pair attempted to steal the Buick, but ran into issues when they found that the car's parking brake would stick. While trying to figure it out, a passing motorist named Joe Spinkler saw the two struggling on the side of the road, and being a good Samaritan, he pulled off to help. As he approached the vehicle, Starkweather was pointing to the brake, but it was then that Spinkler noticed the gun and the body in the front seat. Knowing he was in danger, a struggle ensued for the firearm. And luckily, it was at that time that a patrol car pulled up alongside of them. Starkweather, afraid of being caught, peeled off in the stolen Packard, with several police cars chasing after. At one point, officers began firing at the vehicle during the chase. A bullet entered from the back of Starkweather's car, striking him in the ear. It was then that he pulled over, tucked in his shirt, and exited the vehicle. And with officers drawn down on the wanted man, Starkweather dropped to his knees and placed his hands behind his head. Finally, their two-state murder spree was over. Now, upon his arrest, Charles Starkweather never denied shooting any of his victims, but he claimed that it was always done in self-defense. Also, when originally questioned, he confirmed Carol Ann's story and told the police that she had been a hostage. Carol Ann would be extradited back to Nebraska. Now, remember, at this time in history, Miranda rights didn't exist, which is kind of crazy to think, you know, we're doing a case where it's like, you don't have to do like the, you know, you have the right to an attorney, you know, all that. This was how long ago that was, which kind of blew my mind a little bit.
I feel like we've looked it up before when the Miranda rights became official.
No, you are definitely right. I think we have. And if memory serves, I believe I'm checking it now. Yes.
I'm thinking 1965, but I feel like that's DNA.
It's 1966.
Okay.
Yeah. So was that Miranda case? So, yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, we're looking at almost, you know, 10 years before that, which is kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm. All right, keep going.
So with there not being any Miranda rights, Carol Ann Fugate would later claim that she had no idea that she had been arrested when she was first questioned by the police. She also claimed to have not known about her family's murder. But in February of 1958, Starkweather's story about Carol Ann's involvement would begin to change. You see, he had written a letter to Carol apologizing for murdering her family and confessing his love for her. Carol Ann wrote back telling her former boyfriend that she never wanted to see him again. And it was then that the story began to change. According to Starkweather, Carol Ann Fugate was an enthusiastic participant. He claimed that she had stabbed Carol King. Starkweather also told police that Carol Ann had stabbed Lillian Fensel and Clara Ward, and according to Charles, he had only found out once they had fled the home. Now, his trial would begin on May 5th, 1958.
Can I just throw something out there real quick?
Yeah.
Okay, so Starkweather, he's over here accusing Carol Ann of stabbing all of these grown-ups, essentially. She's 13 years old. I'm thinking back to myself at 13 years old. I was tiny, probably 80 pounds.
Yeah, and she's not very big either. Like, you can find photos of her. There's a documentary, like, where you hear her talking, see her. She's not a big person at all.
There's no way she was capable of doing this.
Yeah. Now, what I will say is if he had tied them up, they were already tied up, you know, and I think this is where it gets really tricky, right? Where it's like, was he telling the truth and Carol Ann was really, you know, a hostage, or was he covering for her to like keep her, like, I'm going to protect her. And then when she's like, I don't want anything to do with you, he's like, oh, okay, well, now I'm going to like let everybody know. So it could go either way, right? Like,
yeah,
either he's telling the truth or he's trying to shift blame.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that really fascinated me is like, you don't really know, you know what I mean? Which is like, I don't know, it messes with your head a little bit.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with, I don't think she's capable of doing it.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, I'm not 100% sure.
But I don't know. Are you going to tell me?
I don't know. Like, we'll keep going and we'll talk. I think we'll talk about it a little bit more at the end, but we'll keep going through it. But yeah, it's just, you know, it might be one of those questions that, you know, we never really know. So as I was saying, the trial of Charles Starkweather would begin on May 5th, 1958. Now, strangely, prosecutors only charged him with the murder of Robert Jensen, believing that it would be the easiest way to get a conviction. So, you know, they killed multiple people and he was only charged for the one. But the prosecutors were right, and Charles Starkweather was found guilty and sentenced to death. Now, Carol Ann Fugate's trial would start shortly after, and she was 15 years old at the time. During the trial, Starkweather actually testified against her, and in that testimony, he claimed that he and Carol Ann had committed the murders together, saying that when he went to the electric chair, she should be sitting on his lap. By the end, Carol Ann Fugate was found guilty of first-degree murder. Now, at that time, and even today, she is the youngest female to be sentenced to life in prison. Charles Starkweather would be executed on June 25th, 1959, at the age of 20. And up until his death, he continued to claim that he and Carol Ann had acted together. Which, I also just wanted to stop for a second and kind of talk about how quickly they executed people back then. Because now people are, you know, on death row. Just
like 2 years after.
Yeah, they're on death row forever. And like, they were like, yeah, you're guilty, buddy. Like by 1959, he was gone, which I was like, that's crazy fast.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Now, as for Carol Ann Fugate, she was reportedly a model inmate. And behind the scenes, her attorney, John MacArthur, continued to fight to have Carol Ann's sentence overturned. In fact, his son, James MacArthur, would eventually take up the case for him, spending hours upon hours working on the case pro bono. Now, in 1973, the Nebraska Parole Board recommended that Carol Ann Fugate's sentence be commuted to a certain number of years rather than just life. And she was resentenced to 30 to 50 years. The commutation meant that Carol Ann would actually now be eligible for parole. And on June 20th, 1976, after serving 18 years, Carol Ann Fugate was released from prison. And many people were really surprised by this, especially because Carol Ann never showed remorse for her actions, which is typically a requirement for parole.
She was a child.
Right. And in fact,
does she know what, how to show that?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, at this point it was, you know, we're looking at 18 years later. But what I thought was really interesting is that she said, in fact, I would rather never be released than admit to something that I didn't do. So she was ready to like, hey, if this is where I got to be, I got to be. And for some reason, because normally that doesn't happen, but for some reason they were like, we're still going to give you parole, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
Now, following her release, Fugate actually moved to Michigan. Shout out. And she was able to find work as a nanny before moving into patient transportation at a local hospital. In 2007, she married retired machinist Fred Clare. Now, sadly, Clare would die in a car crash 6 years later. Carol Ann Fugate now resides in Ohio, and she is currently 80 years old. Now, Olivia, if this story sounds at all familiar to you, that's totally understandable. So you may have seen Peter Jackson's The Frighteners starring Michael J. Fox. In that film, Jake Busey and Dee Wallace play fictionalized versions of Charles Starkweather and Carol Ann Fugate. Tim Roth and Frazia Balk also starred as the couple in the 1994 film Murder in the Heartlands. Additionally, the film Natural Born Killers with Woody Harrelson was actually supposed to be inspired by Starkweather and Carol Ann Fugate as well. And you may have heard me mention a documentary that I was watching. So if you have Paramount Plus with Showtime, or if you're just a Showtime subscriber, you can actually watch the docuseries, The 12th Victim, which tells Carol Ann's side of the story. So that's all we've got for this case, for this week, for our 100th case. What are your final thoughts? What are you thinking? Where are we at?
Well, you brought it for this 100th case. Like, this was one, we're going like back to some OG twists and turns, John's original type of episodes. And I love them. Like, this is why we do this podcast. So there was just a lot of things, from governors and lunches and teenagers roaming two states, murdering several people just along the way. They're like a Bonnie and Clyde almost.
Yeah, it's a Bonnie and Clyde, or like a homicidal Romeo and Juliet, or,
yeah,
you know, even like a 1950s, like Thelma and Louise, right? Like, if we go down, we're going down together. It's right. Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's another one where I think that I don't know that she actually did it. I don't know. She was a 13. That's so young.
Yeah, and from what I've found, I think the thing for me, too, is that she hasn't been in any trouble since.
Right? Yeah, like, troubled people would continue to commit crimes. And like he even said, like, she sat in the car and just listened to music. She may have not had any idea what he was doing. Yeah. He's probably like, hey, I'm going in the house. You just stay here. Listen to music. Don't bother me. And then he just walks back out like normal after he's, like, murdered people. So who knows? I mean, who knows?
Yeah, and like that movie, The Frighteners, right? Which I'm sure you've probably never seen, but like Michael J. Fox he can see ghosts, and he is kind of like a con man where he gets ghosts to like haunt people's houses and gets rid of them and then makes money. But he actually comes across like a real demon kind of thing. But in that, Jake Busey is Starkweather, and they show Dee Wallace. She's an older woman, and she's supposed to be Carol Ann like years and years in the future. But it's the same thing where in the film, she just seems like this innocent lady. And then at the end, you're like, oh, no, you're still very much like a homicidal maniac, you know, but there's very much a difference between, you know, a Peter Jackson film and then real life. And you would think if somebody had homicidal tendencies and mental illness to where they could stab several people to death and be aware of their family's murder, that isn't something that would just go away once you hit 15 years old. You know what I mean?
Right. Like that's true. Like psychopath.
No, 110%. So if we're talking deadbolt test, because I know this is like a 1950s case, but when I was going through the research, I was thinking about where you might put it. And I think even though it's an older case, there's still some elements where I was like, maybe she'll put it a little high. So what are you thinking? Where does something like this fall on your deadbolt test?
Okay, so this was a great case. On the twists and the turns and the mystery and what happens next, I give it a 10. If we're thinking deadbolt tests, like, yeah, it's scary. It's random. And I feel like if I grew up in the era of like the 1950s and 60s, I would be that person's like stopping on the side of the road to like offer assistance or like picking up hitchhikers. Like I have that sympathy for people. So I feel like I'd probably find myself in some sort of trouble like that. But it doesn't really make me check my locks.
All right.
So I'm going to do a 7.
Okay. A 7. All right.
But it's a 10 for the episode. I mean, like, it's a great story.
Yeah. And I agree with you. I think for me, on the interesting factor and being like the, like, wow, this happened is definitely a 10 for me as well. I think I'm going to go a little bit higher on the deadbolt test. And this really freaked me out because of the randomness, right? Like, that's the thing that, that's why, like, the home invasion stuff always gets me and stuff like that. It's just the idea that, like, these two kids decided to knock on your door. They're kids. You're probably thinking like they're harmless. You know what I mean? Like nothing's going to happen.
Old yard guy, like someone working in the yard at the one house at Laura's house.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And like, you know, even for August Meyer, you know, it's like, oh, the kid's stuck in the driveway. Let me, you know, come on in.
I'll go help. Yeah.
Get my work boots on or whatever. Help, you know, drag you out of the mud. And then you're getting blown away with a shotgun. Yep. You know, so I think, you know, for the randomness and, you know, just the fact that, again, somebody so young could have that kind of rage in them. I'm going to put it at 9 because it's just unsuspecting. You know what I mean?
That's a very valid rating.
Well, you know, we don't always have to agree. I think that's what makes this podcast makes it fun. You know, we get to have some conversation, but that is where we fall on the deadbolt test. Olivia's coming in at a 7. She's wrong. I'm coming in at 9. But as always, we want to hear from the
always
listeners.
Always right.
No, I'm just being silly. Olivia's at a 7. I'm at a 9. But as always, we want to hear from the listeners, the locksmiths. Where does the murderous couple, Charles Starkweather, Carol Ann Fugate, fall on your deadbolt test? You can let us know. Reach out to us on Instagram at Check the Locks Pod. You can find us on Twitter, Check the Locks. And if you're not in our Facebook group, well, what the heck are you doing? Come on over, join up. We'd love to get to know you, spend a little time with you, just have you as part of our family. Olivia, normally this is where we go into our 5-star review, right? Because this case was very, very interesting. However, we're going to get to it. But this is our 100th episode, right? We had people who called in, who are hanging out with us. What do you think? Should we listen to another voicemail?
Yeah, I think we just need to hear what the people had to say.
All right, let's do it.
Hi, Olivia. Hi, John. This is Meg from Kansas. I just wanted to say happy 100th episode. That's super exciting for you guys. It's also super exciting for us, your community. I definitely feel like I hang out with you guys all day, no matter what I'm doing, whether I'm cleaning, in the car, typing up documents at work with my headphones in. You really are a part of your community's life, and I think that's amazing. You really do take care of us. Also, I love your guys' merchandise. It's super cute. I can't wait to see what else you guys do. So happy 100 and can't wait for the next episode.
Meg from Kansas.
Meg from Kansas. She's actually one of our Patreon family. And you may remember around Christmas last year, we had that really cool true crime Night Before Christmas poem. That was Meg. She wrote it and posted it in the Facebook group. It was really, really cool.
Yeah. John has to keep me in the know on everything that happens. I'm not very tech savvy in a way that I miss things and I don't know.
You get them, but you get them later. You're like, oh,
I do. I'm like, oh, yeah. No, I'm like, oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, for sure. Like,
oh, yeah, I did see that. I try to keep up with it. But anyways, Meg from Kansas, that was a lovely voicemail. I can't believe, again, that people listen to us while they're working and, you know, that we even have that many episodes for people to just like listen to us a lot, you know? It's not like others where the seasons stop and you have to wait and wait and wait. Like people are with us on their day to day and that's really, really special. And it truly, truly means a lot to me.
Yeah. 110%. And you know, Meg is super creative and, you know, we're lucky enough to have her as part of our Patreon family, which, you know, anybody who supports us, we appreciate so, so much and just really appreciate you again, letting us hang out with you at work. And just letting us, you know, while you clean and things like that, it really, I don't know, it makes me feel happy to be like, oh, like we're guests in your life, you know? And I feel like that's not something that you do for just anybody. You know what I mean? Like you wouldn't just invite some random person over to be like, hey, I'm cleaning. You just want to come sit on my couch and talk. You know what I mean?
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, I feel very, very blessed that we get the opportunity to do that. So Meg, thank you so much. Also, our next Patreon meetup, you better be there because we want to get to talk to you, hang out with you, get on that Zoom call with you. We did get an email as well. So we got an email from Scott from the Facebook group. Shout out, Scott. But Scott I love Scott. We have very similar senses of humor. So,
But I feel like we've talked about Scott before on the podcast.
We probably have, but I
maybe in the Facebook group or something.
Yeah. But shout out to Scott. He is awesome and really appreciate him being part of the group. But Scott said, I've been listening since nearly the beginning. I just love how you cover stories that aren't so mainstream, those obscure cases. And you don't drag out the episodes for a long time. It makes listening so much easier. I listen to y'all going to and from work. And my favorite episode / serial killer is Willie Picton. He recently died. Thank goodness. It might be weird to have a favorite, but as sick as this might sound, he had an opportunity to keep going for years. But no one ever said he was smart. Again, thank goodness. Well, keep up the great work. We all really appreciate it, Scott. So thank you, Scott, for leaving.
I know.
It's just awesome.
An email.
Yeah. You know, and it's
I don't
just
know that we've ever gotten an email.
Yeah, we've gotten a few in the past that, you know, we've read here or there. But like, you know, when I put the message, I was like, email us, like leave us a voicemail, send us stuff on Instagram, things like that. And, you know, it's weird because, you know, people listen, but you never really like you're like, man, I hope
listen. That's what we tell ourselves.
Yeah, I hope people are going to send us stuff. And like we got a bunch and like this episode, you know, I don't want it to be like 3 hours long. So I, you know, picked and choose some, but
yeah,
you know, again, Scott, just thank you for your support. Like you're always in the Facebook group. You're cracking jokes. You're making me laugh. Like, I don't know. Again, just really, really appreciate you and just so happy to have you as part of the family. And thanks for letting us hang out with you on your drive to and from work. Well, Olivia, before we get into our review, do you think we have time for one more voicemail?
Oh my gosh, there's a third one.
There's a third one. Should we listen to it?
Yeah.
All righty.
It's my favorite part of the whole thing.
All right. I know this is like Christmas and your birthday all rolled into one.
All in one.
All right. So let's check out the next one.
Hey, John and Olivia. It is Angel from the Facebook group. I am so excited for you guys reaching your 100th episode. I have been listening since pretty much the beginning, but I have definitely listened to all of the episodes. I cannot think of my favorite episode because there has been so many wonderful ones, but I guess I'll say that right now my favorite episode is the one where Olivia dropped the F-bomb at the end of it. I can't remember the name of it, but it just made me so proud to hear her say that. Thank you guys so much for putting out your content each week, twice a week. I usually listen on my way to work, or if I'm off work for the day, I will listen while I'm riding in the car. But I just really enjoy you guys. I love that you do like smaller cases that aren't always well known. And I also love it when you guys do a theme, like when y'all did the Christmas theme and the Thanksgiving theme, even though I know you said you don't do it on purpose, but I love that. But just keep doing what you're doing. And thank you guys for all of your hard work. And I can't wait for the next 100 episodes.
All of our OGs are like showing up. I love it. Angel, thank you so much. And, you know, my mom was mad at me for saying that F word. But, you know, that's all. You know, sometimes I think it a lot in my head when we're going through these cases, kind of like today's. But I just, you know, I try to keep it censored PG-13, you know, in case the teenagers might be listening in the car. I'm not really sure what the... Are we rated PG-13?
Oh, we're rated TV MA, even though we're a podcast. So this is MA all day for sure.
All right, all right, all right. But anyways, thank you so much, everybody, for leaving the voicemails, sending the emails, giving us a lot of love and support. We really can't do it without you guys listening. So it's definitely doesn't go unnoticed, and we really appreciate it.
Yeah, and Angel, again, you've been with us since like day one. I also have had the pleasure to hang out with Angel on a Zoom call as well. And, you know, mm-hmm. I got to take a moment and let people know, you know, people who support us, like we like to support them as well. So if you didn't know, Angel actually has her own podcast called the Modco Podcast. And it's actually created to shine a light on the realness of being an entrepreneur. It covers things like why organization is not a one size fits all thing, why you need to give yourself grace, and so much more. So definitely check it out, because the Modco Podcast aims to provide motivation, inspiration, and encouragement to keep you going after your dreams. And Angel is an amazing host. She has some wonderful guests. So check it out. That's the Modco Podcast. If you listen to us, support our supporters and check it out. And Angel, again, fun fact, Angel actually sent me a message on Facebook because they're traveling to Nashville for a family vacation. So we spent the day going back and forth. Hey, you know, take the kids here. This would be a lot of fun. This is some family friendly stuff. So, again, you know, not only do I consider Angel, you know, a supporter of the show, but she's also, you know, I call her my friend because, you know, just really lucky to have met her and everybody that, you know, has left these voicemails and these emails. We're just lucky to have you in our lives. So check out her podcast. And Olivia, I think now would be the right time, because usually I have a bad taste in my mouth when we get this, but I'm like smiling from ear to ear.
You're like, you've been grinning since we got on tonight. I'm here. And
I know
John has been so giddy since we've got on Zoom tonight. And he's just been so excited and happy about this episode.
I really, really have. Like I said, it just feels nice that like, we're getting to celebrate. It feels like we're celebrating the work that we've done and like the community that we've built. And it's just cool. Yeah. It's cool to be like, hey, we got a family around this, you know?
Mm, yeah.
But with that being said, I could use a 5-star review. I think that'd be a great way to close this out. What about you? You got a 5-star review for us?
Yes. And this one, I'm just going to spell out, because this review comes from JDH. Sid NSNS.
Oh, yeah.
And they said, do you know this name?
So I will say, fun fact, this is from one of our Canadian listeners, because this one came through our webpage. And, you know, that's the only way we really get to see the Canadian Apple Podcast reviews. So thank you for leaving us a love from Canada.
Yeah. Love from Canada. They said, love this. This podcast really got me hooked on the true crime. I like that it's short and to the point. Highly recommend. So thank you from Canada, JDHSIDNSNS. We appreciate your 5-star review and leaving us a little bit of love. And thank you for listening.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to leave us that review. You know, we talk about it all the time, but it really does help us. It gets into those other shows' recommendations, helps new listeners find the show. And, you know, if you say something nice and let people know how you feel, other people are just more inclined to put it on and check it out. So we really do appreciate you taking the time. It does help us immensely. we are still trying to figure out the international shipping thing. So definitely reach out to us. You can find us again, Instagram, Check the Locks Pod. Find us on Twitter, Check the Locks. If you're on our Facebook group, you can holler at us there as well. Let us know. We are working out some ways that we can get some stuff sent internationally. We would love to get you some stickers, buttons, you know, whatever we can to, you know, again, just say thank you for taking the time to leave that review. And Olivia, if somebody would like to have their 5-star review read on the podcast, what is the best way to do that?
Well, they need to go to the Apple Podcast app, go to our show's homepage, scroll down where you see all 5 stars, whatever color they may be, and click all 5 of them and leave us a little bit of a little love and a little thoughts and well wishes. But John, I will say I recently have sent something to Canada, so I've got it figured out.
Okay. Awesome. Definitely. So Olivia's got the hookup. So just make sure that you're reaching out to us, because again, you know, we're going to do everything we can to get that out for you. So, and with that, that is the review after our 100th case. As always, if you like what we do, you want to help financially support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron. Head over to patreon.com/checkthelocks. Get signed up today. Got a lot of exclusive benefits, selective tiers. You get coffee mugs, stickers, all sorts of stuff. Plus you get the episodes ad free. So if you love Check the Locks, but you hate commercials, Patreon is the way to go. So again, if you like what we do, you want to help us keep the lights on, throw us a couple bones. That's patreon.com/checkthelocks. Get signed up today. And if you can't financially support the show, we definitely understand. Just listening, hanging out with us, sending us those voicemails means just as much, if not more. So if that is you, you're listening, you're telling people to check out the show, letting them know about this weird little podcast, just know that from the bottom of our hearts, we appreciate you so much. Again, our goal is just to grow this community, our family, and the best way for us to do that is by you letting people know to listen. So if you're sharing what we do with the people who are important to you, just know that we appreciate it more than we could ever tell you. That's all that we have for this week's 100th case, but please make sure that you are subscribed to Check the Lock so that you never miss an episode. We will see you again next week with another brand new, truly terrifying true crime case. But until then, don't forget to
check the locks.
See you next week. Pew, 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 pew. Happy 100.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.